Ladies and gentlemen, it's the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley. With me this week are Simon Daines.
Hello, everybody.
And James Baldock.
Hail and well met.
Indeed, and the same to you. We wish you all a happy new year. We're here.
Happy new year.
Yeah, indeed. We're here not to talk about Twice Upon a Time, because we've already done a podcast about that featuring James McLean and Gareth Kavanagh, which is a very good long discussion into the episode. So I suggest you click the show notes, go and find that and go and listen to that, because they take it apart and put it back together in expert style. No, this time we're talking about the other big Doctor Who thing that happened around Christmas, which is the return of Shada!
Hooray!
Hooray, hurrah! The unfinished symphony of Doctor Who has been finished again, following a 1992 release which featured Tom Baker on video doing linked pieces between the surviving footage. Then there's the 2003 version, which was BBCI and Big Finish, with some rudimentary animation, starring Paul McGann in place of Tom Baker. And I think Andrew Sachs was in it as well, wasn't he?
Yes.
Skagway, yeah. And Lala Ward.
And Melvin Hayes as well, wasn't he? It was the porter.
Oh, Melvin Hayes, yes, that's right. Yes. Yes.
Mr. Wendy Padbury.
Yes, and wasn't... And it had David Brearley in it as well, didn't it?
Yes. May have done.
Yeah. We'll come to that in a moment. So there's that. And then there's the secret version that no one's seen.
Yeah.
Which John Levine produced for his own personal pleasure.
John Levine?
Ian Levine, I beg your pardon.
Don't get them mixed up.
I did a soft puppet version of it.
That was the epitome of an angry laugh, then, Christian.
Was it really? Okay.
Ian Levine. Well, it was no laughing matter when Ian Levine found out about the new version, was it?
But well, indeed, indeed. And there's also the Gareth Roberts literary adaptation, which I enjoy.
I enjoyed
that a lot. Yes. So there's that one as well, and then there's this brand new one, which takes original footage, brings in animation, which you've probably seen. New special effects, excellent new model work, I have to say. Yeah. And some new voice work as well is in there for the stuff that they didn't film at the time. Now, this was recorded in 1979, most of it, and it didn't make it to air. It didn't complete due to industrial action at the BBC, resulting in mainly, I think it's the two space, it's Shada and Skagway's main spacecraft, isn't it? I think the sets weren't produced for. Yeah. Or if they were produced, they weren't later accessible. So, this is out on DVD and Blu-ray. It's in standard DVD format. It's also in the steel box or steel book format as well, which is one I've got. When I watched it over the last couple of days, one of the things that struck me, and I enjoyed it immensely, obviously, with any of these things, getting used to the animation is a little bit of a problem. It does, you know, it takes a few moments just to get you into it, even with the lovely way that they've introduced it here, which is from panning up from punting on the cam, and then looking at the sky, and then doing an animated version, like an artistic version of that sky, and panning back down into the university. But yeah, I found it hugely enjoyable, but it's in movie format, and I do wonder why they did it in movie format rather than episodic. Mm. Any thoughts on that, James?
Yeah, it's interesting because you can see where the cliffhangers are.
Yes.
When obviously
I love Skagru's sort of laugh at Chronotis. You just know that that is a cliffhanger.
Exactly, yes. And usually when the camera suddenly pans in on Baker looking panicked, there's always a cliffhanger, you know. So you could see, but of course, obviously what they did was they went with the... I think they cleverly spliced together the bit before the cliffhanger scene, and then sort of the 20 seconds of overlapping footage that you get that's new at the beginning of this episode, if you see what I mean. So, I mean, I could tell where the cliffhangers were, but I couldn't tell where the joins were, which I think is a compliment towards, you know, how they edited it. And it works in that respect. But yeah, I don't know why they chose to do it as a single film, because, you know, the episodes are sort of how we remember it, really, I suppose. It felt unnecessarily revisionist to sort of make it into one continuous track. But on the other hand, I mean, there was a special screening of this, and perhaps they edited it for that, and then thought, well, actually, we might as well put this out as is, rather than, you know...
But it is cut, isn't it? It is truncated. It's not the complete script redone.
I don't know.
I think there might be something towards the end that isn't there, because there is nothing... There's no dialogue from Dennis Carey at the end.
Yeah.
So, which, for obvious reasons, but a lot of the end stuff is animated as well.
Yes.
So that would suggest to me that there is some truncation towards the end.
Yeah. And also cost, I suppose, you know, it just keeps the cost down, doesn't it, if you have less animation to do.
How long is your average six-episode Doctor Who story, including credits? Because it strikes me, because it seemed to be a similar length, so I wasn't quite sure.
Is it about 115 minutes, something like that?
Hang on a second. I've got here, in that ever reliable source of information that is Wikipedia.
Never heard of it.
The Invasion of Time, six episodes of 25 minutes each, which is, 150 minutes.
Far too long for the Invasion of Time.
Yes, you could have easily done that. But no, so there's 150 minutes. I think Sharda was about... It was either two hours 14 or 2 hours 20.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I
think it was 2 hours 26.
Right, yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, I couldn't remember the exact duration, but if you take out credits and, you know, obviously overlapping... It felt like a full six-episode story.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever they'd cut. So I don't know how much of it was truncated. I mean, obviously, yes, there was the ending. And there was the scene at the end. And I honestly couldn't remember. There is that final scene. Simon, do you know about the final scene? Because I didn't want to spoil it necessarily. But
no, I don't.
It's the one that's caused all the... do you think we should ruin it for him? Or do you think we should let him find out?
Oh, go on.
About without...
Oh, I don't think it's going to ruin his life, is it?
No, probably not.
Simon is a grown-up.
That was from ages ago.
And basically, it ends with them all getting in the TARDIS and vanishing. And the very last scene is set in the TARDIS, where you can hear Lala Ward off camera asking about what happened to everyone and wrapping up the story. And underneath the TARDIS console, you can see a pair of boots that obviously belong to a now elderly Tom Baker. And, of course, when he reemerges from underneath, it's him as he is now. And they superimpose K-9 into the scene. So it's basically the older version of the Fourth Doctor acting out in live action. And it's like, wow, it's a big deal because Tom Baker is now, you know, playing the Doctor again on screen as opposed to done it in Big Finish figures.
Mm.
And they've rebuilt the set as well, haven't they?
Yes, they did, yeah.
We shouldn't overlook that. It's a lovely job as well. I'm sure if Mr. McLean was here, he'd be able to tell us where they went wrong. but it's convincing enough.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the photographs from it anyway.
Oh, so I talked over you then. What would you say?
No, I was just saying I've seen the photographs of it.
Yes.
So, I mean, is this the Fourth Doctor in his 72nd incarnation, i.e. the one who appeared in...
Who knows?
Doctor.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows?
Oh, I said who knows as well. I didn't even mean to say who knows. Oh. Now we've got an interesting combination of Sharderisms within this, because Simon hasn't seen the new version, and I haven't seen the 1992 version.
Yeah.
James, you've seen both.
I have, but I haven't seen the Big Finish version.
I have seen the Big Finish version.
Uh-huh.
Now, I do... One thing I was just going to mention, and I want to talk about the 1992 version, but I do seem to remember from the Big Finish version that they spend more time in Sharda
Yeah.
Which contrasts with this one. And I think the difference has got to be because they didn't have Dennis Carey.
Yeah.
For that version. So I think... Who played Chronotis in that one? Or am I completely wrong? Answers on the postcard. Oh, let's just look that up. I'm thinking there was more time spent at Sharda.
Oh, it's James Fox, surely.
Ah.
On the Big Finish version.
Well, in,
it was a big name. I remember that much.
Yes, that rings a bell.
I think it was James Fox.
Right. Well, if that's the case, then my memory doesn't deceive me. Because yeah, I did recall them spending more time at Sharda than they do in this version. Which they're more or less there. The bad guys are released, and then the Doctor wins.
Mm.
It seemed to take the pacing was better in the Big Finish version, with a lack of dialogue from Dennis Carey as Chronotis / Saliavin. Spoilers. Come on, spoilers. It's nearly 40 years old. Yes, that makes more sense. So the 1992 version, I have seen a tiny bit of this, well, two tiny bits of this, I suppose, obviously in Five Doctors and in the Tom Baker years.
Yes.
Can you run me through exactly how this is formatted? Is Tom Baker talking to the camera?
Yes.
Right. Was it recorded at the same time as the Tom Baker years?
No, I think it was done afterwards.
Right, okay.
It's in a different location.
Right.
Because they recorded the links for Sharda that John Nathan Turner directed them. And they were recorded at the Museum of the Moving Image, which used to be on the South Bank. Now sadly demised. When it opened, they had a Doctor Who exhibition, which was called Behind the Sofa, and it was extremely good as well. And it was a wonderful museum. It's a hell of a shame that it's no longer there.
Isn't that where they recorded the Tom Baker years?
No, that was somewhere else.
Oh, right, I thought it was the same place.
He's in a house, a sort of stately home type place.
Yes. Yes.
But it's similar in format, and I think that the narration that Tom does was written in the third person, and then Baker said, can't I do it as the Doctor? So it is done as the Doctor, although he's not dressed as the Doctor. He's dressed in a lounge suit, but it's in the first person, and it is direct to camera. I mean, it's very well done. They've got some fairly risible video effects to fill in for some of the effects, sort of Captain Pugwash standard. The things cut out, sort of cardboard cutouts moving along on the slides. Or that's what it looks like. Yeah, I mean, I suppose, going back to your comment about the pacing being better on the Big Finish version, I mean, presumably what they had, they didn't have an edit of it. They simply had the raw footage. So for each video versions of it, they had to re-edit the footage into a form that would fit the release. So I don't know if they've used different takes or they've used the same takes, or indeed if there were more than one take of each scene. Presumably the likelihood is they had a couple of takes to choose from on the tapes.
There are a couple of scenes where Dennis Carey appears to fluff.
Yes.
What do you think, James?
Well, the weird thing about it, as I remember, was that, of course, most of the ending is not there.
Yeah.
In the climatic scene in which, K-9 brings down the robots, is basically Baker talking to camera about it. So it feels like, conversely, much of the first half of the story was recorded and filmed and is there, because, of course, that takes place in Cambridge and in Quinotis's study. So it feels as if they've got this whopping great story which is half there, and then all of a sudden there's a lot of... it's like when you do an exam and you get towards the end and you have to wrap up really quickly, and then you're just scribbling frantically and not really finishing the essay you've written. It felt a bit like that, which was unavoidable, given what they had. But was a bit of a shame. So I watched it and thought, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, it's a, and it's a shame that we won't get to see it. And then, of course, you know, this comes out. So this, I mean, it was, I think, I mean, you're right in this. I've always felt Shada drags an awful lot anyway.
Like a lot of starters.
Well, yeah, I mean, that... I mean, frankly, I watched it again this week, and that scene where they're punting down the cam, I know it's a classic. I find it very difficult to watch. Mm. It feels awfully stilted. It doesn't gel at all. Mm. There's a lot of... it's almost like Romano and the Doctor having two completely separate conversations, which may be part of the point, but it doesn't make it fun. And there are lots of bits like that. I think it's Baker... who at its most sort of self-indulgent, but like City of Death.
I mean, well, still, I think Douglas Adams is being self-indulgent as well with throwing in a lot
absolutely.
Of gags.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's well known that he didn't actually like Shada anyway, and was probably not terribly sorry when it was never finished. But there is a lot of intellectual back and forth between the Doctor and Romana too, and some of it is fun, and some of it is. It's just a bit much, and it bogs down some of the stories. There, paradoxically, things actually improve once Romana's on her final series with Baker when they go to eSpace, and that I like her a lot more in that.
Yeah. But I think that's absolutely right. I think Lala Walcott is much, much better in her second season than in her first season. And incidentally, somebody pointed out that. You know, in a sense, we've already had a female doctor in that Lala Ward's Romana was very much a female doctor in her second series. But that's a controversial thing, which we will not follow up.
Not today, anyway.
Not today.
Okay, well, what stands out for you, James, in the new Shada?
It was interesting. You brought up what I was going to, which was that first transition to animation, because I thought... What's going to happen when they do the animation? Am I going to notice? Is it going to suddenly bust through the fourth wall? And will my suspension of disbelief be utterly shattered? And then you have that lovely transition of which we spoke, in which, yes, the camera pans up, the camera pans down, and it's a cartoon. And I didn't care. It was nice to see that working. It works. I think the biggest problem I always have with... revisiting old doctors is the voice work because they sound unavoidably older.
Yes.
I mean, Baker does, Lala certainly does, so Lala Ward certainly does. The Daniel Hill didn't, which struck me as a little odd. I was expecting him to rage quite a bit.
Yeah, he sounded very, very much the same.
He sounded very much like he always did. I can't remember who's playing Claire now, and I'm not sure why the original actress wasn't involved. It could be that she wasn't asked. It could be that she didn't want to do it. I honestly don't know. So that was easy to carry. But I always listen to the Big Finish Tom Baker stuff and think, I can never quite believe it as him. But I have a big hang up about David Bradley in the same respect. I found it very difficult to buy him as the first Doctor. Mm-hmm. In Twice Upon a Time, even though I really did my best. And I seem to be in a minority. Everybody seems to find this stuff easier to grasp than I do. This is the point where you say, no, actually, I'm with you on that.
I think if you go back to the Five Doctors on the David Bradley thing, you know, there were a lot of viewers who didn't realise that Richard Herndl wasn't William Hartnell, i.e. that it was a different actor playing the first Doctor. And again, I think it's the... I mean, I think it's the difference between the semi-casual viewer and the committed fan viewer. I think if anybody gave it half a thought, they would realise that Hartnell would have been over 100 years old if he'd played the first Doctor in the recent one. But you know, I bet you there are some people out there who assumed it was the same actor.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because actually I sent the ending of Twice Upon a Time, you know, the YouTube clip, so not Twice Upon a Time, The Doctor Falls, when Bradley emerges first, to my old man, who was a big Hartnell fan, and yeah. always maintained there was only one Doctor, and that was William Hartnell. Mm. We've had no end of conversations about that. But he emailed back and said, surely William Hartnell's dead.
Yes.
And if so, which I suppose if Bradley ever heard about that, he will take as an immense compliment.
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
But I said, yes, not, it's not him, but. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me that there were people who probably sort of thought Herndl was Hartnell, particularly with us not having the internet or the, yeah. sort of, the juggernaut of publicity that we now have.
It's interesting, too, that David Bradley plays the First Doctor much more like Hartnell than Richard Herndl did, who Richard Herndl basically ignored Hartnell's interpretation and did his own thing.
Yeah.
You know, and perhaps it would have worked better if we had David Bradley's take on the First Doctor rather than David Bradley playing William Hartnell playing the First Doctor. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed Twice Upon a Time. I did enjoy Twice Upon a Time, but I don't think it stands up to much critical scrutiny. But then I don't think it's meant to. Whereas Shraddha, of course, can take a lot of critical scrutiny because it's been around for a long time.
I didn't realise that the animated Claire had a different voice to the live action yeah. Claire.
No, I have I got that wrong, or is that actually?
I'm not sure. I can't find any reference to it. It's a lady yeah, called.
I'm fairly certain when I watched the credits. Yeah. There was Claire, the voice actor. So Claire, the actor, whose name unfortunately escapes me now, and Claire, the voice actor. So I'm reasonably confident that the new
right.
version.
Okay, I won't argue with you. I didn't realise. Is it Victoria Burgoyne or something like that? The actress.
Victoria Burgoyne played the original Claire.
Yeah, she's got lovely legs. I have to say.
Yeah.
Good heavens, man.
I know. I don't normally notice these things at all.
Would you say that of Tom Baker?
I think you probably had quite decent legs at the time.
I think Tom Baker's legs are very fine.
Yeah, they're long. I think hers are longer.
Long legs, yes.
Here we are. It was Victoria Burgoyne in the original. It's Susanna Harker in the new version.
Oh, well, she did the Big Finish version.
Susanna Harker,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Susanna Harker does the... does the DVD version as well.
Which version right. is this?
I think Susanna Harker did the Big Finish version.
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah. Susanna Harker did the Big Finish okay. version, yeah.
Because she was House of Cards and Pride and Prejudice, wasn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought I recognised the name. But
yeah. I think she's been close friends with Paul McGann at some point as well.
Ah.
Who was the Doctor?
Yes.
In the 2003 version. I mean, if we're going to talk about Shadow, we've got to talk about that version in a little bit more detail, I suppose. I mean, really, that was the first bit of Paul McGann that I enjoyed after the TV movie. I think it was the biggest piece of Paul McGann until 2013.
Yeah.
And I think they did a good job with it.
Mm.
Pulling together who they did. They used John Leeson as K-9, which I'm now thinking about my earlier comment about David Brearley, because he clearly didn't do the Big Finish Charter, so he must have passed on by then. So, is there K-9 dialogue later in the episode? Did they get a voice artist in to do a K-9? Is it Briggs? In the new version? I don't know. But, do either of you have any memories of the... Big Finish Shada.
No.
it was good.
It was well done, yeah.
You said that it was the first bit of McGann you enjoyed, Christian. Do I take that to mean that you're not a big fan of the other Big Finish stuff that he did?
I found... I started at the beginning, and I found it a little bit difficult, Storm Warning.
Yes.
So I didn't really listen to much more after that for a few years. I have listened to other McGanns. I've listened to the Crinoid one and the Cybermen in the Hospital one and a couple of others. And I have no problem with McGann on audio at all. I just think I think it took them a while to get into the stride. Whereas I think this one, because they had something that was ready made and attractive to BBC to broadcast on their on BBC I and on the Red Bus and what have you, attracting bigger names to it. I don't know, because you know they get good names at Big Finch. I just think it just feels a little bit more polished than some of the early McGann audios, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe they had more money and more time. Well,
exactly.
To play,
but... Yeah.
Yes. Out of interest, do either of you watch Holby City?
Yes.
I am aware of it.
I don't watch it by choice. Kerry watches it, so it's...
yeah. It's just, I mean, for most people who don't watch Holby City, you should know Paul McGann has been in it since... playing a character who is uncannily... doctor. Just in terms of the way he behaves.
He's far more like the Doctor than he is, say... that other thing that he does, the Admiral in Hornblower, for instance, or Marwood in With Nell and I.
It's not just that he's playing a Doctor.
No,
he's playing the Doctor.
Yeah.
He's the smartest person in the room. Knows it. He's not in the least arrogant about it. But he's quietly confident. Starts automatically ordering people about. Has all sorts of innovative techniques to solve crisis problems. Everybody just gets behind him. I think in his second or third episode, there was a Jelly Babies gag, which made me. but the whole thing, it's sitting there watching him, and he's obviously not playing the Doctor, but it's maybe the closest we ever get to seeing him on TV playing the Doctor again. Which I suppose it's something to be celebrated in a way.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, we're getting off the point, but yeah, I'm with you on Storm Warning, actually, because I remember listening to that. And the opening reminded me of The Deadly Assassin. In that it's a lot of the Doctor talking to himself. And the Doctor, it's never much fun when the Doctor talks to himself. Most of the time it's just uncomfortable to listen to. And Storm Warning opens with that. This is why the Doctor needs a companion, whatever Tom Baker tells you. you always have to have somebody for the Doctor to bounce off.
Even a talking cabbage.
Sorry?
Yeah.
Even a talking cabbage.
Yeah, even a Cyberman head.
Yes.
Yeah, or a penguin.
Or a shape-shifting penguin, indeed. Yeah. Listen, going back to Sharda and the new version, have you had taken the time to watch any of the extras?
No.
No. Well, I did last night. So I revisited the... I can't remember where I first saw it. Because I don't think I have another version of Sharda. On DVD, but I've seen the document. It must have been on a different, maybe on one of the box sets or something that were released in 2013. But there's a documentary with Daniel Hill and Olivia Bazalgette and various other people that were involved in archive footage of Pennant Roberts and Tom Baker as well in his woods talking about Sharda. So that's on there. That's an old feature that's been. Re-release, but there's some new stuff as well. There's some examples of the model work. And there's such a lot going on with the models. It's fantastic. There are, for instance, there's the shots of the model TARDIS in space. You can see them filming that, and the TARDIS is upside down. So it's hanging and spinning and being moved across in front of the camera with a big arm. This is the stuff that they couldn't do in the '70s. There's a rocket, Skagra ship launching from the main ship. Rather than like coming out on wires left to right from the side, it's being pulled out from above. In a far better, you know, you're obviously going to get a better pull. More direction, more linear direction pulling up than pulling to the side, because you're fighting gravity pulling to the side unequally rather with just, pulling from the bottom. It's a narrower grab, so there's less margin for error. And it looks smooth and it looks far better. It's so good. I recommend having a look at those. There's also some green screen work included in there. So you've got... Daniel Hill just doing the bits in the animation where he's looking at the book in the lab. Only he's doing it live action. And then there's Barnaby Edwards as well. This is brilliant. There's Barnaby Edwards acting the what are the monsters called? The Krags?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yes. Acting out Krag motion for the motion capture. Mm-hmm. and then he finishes it by growling. right into the camera. Not quite MGM Lion style, but they maybe should have done that. So yeah, it's, there's some good extras on there. It's worth taking a look at. I'll tell you a little story. I've had Shadow on my wish list. I didn't buy it because I thought someone was going to buy it for Christmas. But I thought, just in case they don't know that I want it, I'll put it on my wish list. Mm-hmm. Now my birthday's just after Christmas. I didn't get it for Christmas, and I was absolutely distraught. I got all of these things. I got cookbooks and some jams and preserves and things and T-shirts, and I got cute little things off the children. But I didn't get Sharda, and I was absolutely bewildered why no one had got me Sharda. And then my birthday came, and I didn't get Sharda. And I was thinking, what the hell's going on? Why haven't I got Sharda? And it turned out my sister had bought Sharda for me. But they'd run out. And it only came last week. From Amazon. They'd run out of stock of it on Amazon. So it only came last week. Which, I was delighted when it arrived.
Mm.
And now there's also a Blu-ray ROM disc in there as well with a load of material on it. Like Radio Times things and I think there's camera scripts and what have you that you can run on a computer if you've got a Blu-ray drive on your computer, which I don't, unfortunately. Mm. Now, do you have a copy, Simon, or have you just not got around to buying it?
I have got a copy. Right. I got it from Sainsbury's. Other outlets are available.
They are indeed, yes. Although their chocolate chip, triple chocolate chip cookies might not be as nice.
No.
So, I mean, have I tempted you to watch it now?
Oh, yes, yes, very much so. Very much so. It's interesting what you were saying about, the model work name-dropping here. I was talking to Mike Tucker about this.
Right.
And I think he does the model work for Sharda, doesn't he?
He does, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a move in the later Moffats away from model work and towards CGI, and... There has been some miniature model work happening, and I have to say that Mike's judgment, and I think he's right, is that you tend to get, although you can't do everything with CGI, but you do tend to get better results with model work than you do with CGI. Mm. And I think it's a mistake for the present Doctor Who's to, rely so much on CGI. I think we've seen some pretty ropey CGI indeed.
Well, the CGI in...
But I think we've seen some pretty... What?
We have seen some bad CGI. What? I was going to say, I think one that gets a lot of criticism is Oh, good Lord, what's it called? The one where Matt Gaetz is in it, but he didn't write it.
Lazarus Experiment.
Yes,
Lazarus Experiment. That got a lot of criticism. I thought that monster was okay. We've seen worse CGI. Worse CGI since then.
Yeah,
but it doesn't get the same ire.
I think if you look at the train in the that one with Frank Skinner in. Thank you. The one with the name of which temporarily escapes me, but which you have supplied. I mean, the model work of the train. Not sorry, the CGI work of the train is terrible. And would have been much, much better realised using miniatures.
Yeah.
So I hope that Chibnall will commission more model work rather than sticking it all out to be done on computers.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of model work.
Yeah. That's assuming Chibnall takes us off planet. Of course, I mean we could be getting a series of Earthbound adventures with no model work at all.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
You talk about CG. I remember when they redid Red Dwarf a few years ago, and they replaced. I honestly can't remember whether they redid all the early episodes or whether it was just something that happened in the later series. But they took out the models of Starbuck and replaced them with CG.
Yeah,
and I remember at least that's the way I remember seeing it. And it looked awfully flat.
Yeah,
there wasn't the same. So Starbuck, of course, goes to the cosmos and is constantly getting pounded by rocks or lasers, yes, or whatever, or bits of him blowing up. And it always looks more real, even when it was obviously a model.
Yeah.
Whereas when you've got a very nice-looking explosion with a CG Starbug, it felt like you're watching a CG Starbug, and I never got used to that. But maybe I'm just hopelessly old school.
If we go back to Shada.
Yes, please.
Can I confess a heresy?
Go on, then. Heretic.
Okay. I don't think Douglas Adams is very good. I think Douglas Adams is a one-trick pony, basically. He did Hitchhikers, which was very good on the radio. And I can remember it first coming out on the radio. And then Hitchhikers was endlessly revamped, and really, there wasn't a great deal else that he did. I mean, I know he did some work on Doctor Who, but the Hitchhiker purists are quite sniffy about all
they
that.
They are indeed. I tend to ignore them.
I didn't like his direction, the direction that he took Doctor Who in. I mean, I know Graham Williams's view was that he and Tom Baker, Adams and Tom Baker, would hit it off very well, and there would be a flowering of creativity. And I just think Doctor Who got silly. And, you know, it's why I wouldn't rate Tom Baker as my favourite Doctor, because essentially, I mean, there are transitional stages, but there are essentially two versions of Tom Baker's Doctor. There's the, you know, the gothic, gritty Doctor who appears in the Hinchcliffe episodes. And then I think the performance deteriorates as it gets sillier and he's allowed to be more self-indulgent. And then it's tightened up when John Nathan Turner comes on the scene for Tom's last season, but it never quite gets back to as good as it was. So I'm not a huge fan of Tom Baker's stuff. And I think, you know, I know Adams wasn't totally satisfied with Shada because he wrote it under pressure. And something we know about Adams also is that he was a notorious misser of deadlines.
Sure.
He tended to write stuff very quickly. And if you listen to the second series of Hitchhikers on the radio, it's nothing like as good as the first because he didn't have enough time to do it in. And then a lot of that was then rewritten and rewritten and rewritten for different versions of Hitchhikers afterwards. And I feel that, you know, I mean, I know everybody goes on about City of Death and I know that it's good, but I feel that Adams's output for Doctor Who ain't great. There's some interesting stuff there. But, I mean, for example, if you take the opening of Destiny of the Daleks, which is pure Douglas Adams, I think it's absolutely terrible. Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, I know there are dreadful bits from almost every Doctor's reign, but I think some of the worst bits of Tom Baker are the Douglas Adams stuff. So, I mean, I think it's very good that Shada's been completed and that it's available, but I certainly wouldn't rate it as one of the best Tom Baker stories. I honestly don't think it's much better than something like Nightmare of Eden, which at least is tight, even though it's not terribly well realised on screen.
I like Eden. I like that one. Yeah, it's, surprised me how good it was when I saw it.
Yeah, if it didn't look so cheap, it would be a lot better, but it's actually quite a good story.
I think they've done it well, to be honest with you. Just going back, because you say this about Douglas Adams, I think overall you're probably right. I think City of Death does so well because of the cast.
I would never give it 5 stars. I'd give it 4 stars because it does veer off into silliness.
Yeah.
And I know there are people who like that comedic vein in Doctor Who, not least Stephen Moffat. But I think, I do prefer the sort of Barry Letts approach where he says if you take the premise, which is ridiculous, but you accept the premise, and then you ask the question, how would real people react in these situations, then you actually get something that's dramatically much, much tighter.
Yeah.
And one of the problems I had with characters like Clara, and to a lesser extent Amy, was that they became coat hangers to hang smart ass lines on.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you got a quip that was something that nobody would ever possibly say, it just takes you out of the story completely, and the suspension of disbelief goes entirely. But, you know, that's a personal preference. Nevertheless, I don't, even for the more comedic Doctor Whos, I don't think that Douglas Adams is the best sort of exponent of it. I think if you take something like The Three Doctors, the comedy is much better done in that than it is in the Douglas Adams stuff, who, you know, he thinks if you call a planet Flintle Woodle Wicks, then you're going to get an easy laugh.
Okay.
Or Raxophorico Fallopatorius.
I think you've...
But there's the heresy. Yeah. Heresy ends.
I think you've hit a nail on the head there, Simon.
Oh, thank you. I know
that there is a tendency amongst the meme generation for quotes from Doctor Who to be bandied about all over the place. And I think Moffat knew that and latched onto it. To the extent that there... For me, the rot sets in Blink, which is an episode that everybody enjoys. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah.
But there are bits in it where characters such as Sally basically talk like they're in a stop-up play.
Yes.
Can you give an example? What's great about sad? She says, it's happy for deep people.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, it's clever, but nobody ever says that.
It's
a clever line that's been written, will be quoted for years to come.
And he finds it, he writes a clever line and then finds somebody to give it to.
Yeah, essentially. What Amy and Clara became was sort of that archetype of clever characters, whereas Rory is standing there occasionally saying sensible things, but acting in a far more realistic manner than anybody else. That's what I liked about Bill. At least with Bill,
you had
that return to almost like a Rose character. I don't want to say dumb or stupid because that does them a disservice, but more naturalised.
Yeah, and I mean, Pearl Mackie's performance was immensely subtle as well. There was some beautiful playing in that. And I know I did like the performances of the other companions, but if you take New Who and you say of the female companions, who gives the most layered performance, it's got to be Pearl Mackie. There's some absolutely beautiful playing in that. Very, very fine actress, even though she's not coming to my convention. But
maybe we'll talk about that another time.
I don't hold that against her.
Listen, we need to wrap up on Shard. There's a couple of things I want to talk about very briefly. One main thing, I was surprised by how much footage they'd actually recorded in the original shoot. The special effects stuff that they appear to have recorded, like green screen stuff or blue screen stuff, that surprised me that they'd done that.
Yeah.
And also, I need to correct something I said earlier. Disc 3 isn't purely a Blu-ray ROM.
Uh-huh.
Helpfully, it has the 1992 VHS compilation on it.
Oh, well.
As well as the 2003 version.
Yeah.
So,
Not the Ian Levine version.
Pardon?
Not the Ian Levine version.
Not the Ian Levine or the John Levine version. Which is probably just some figures.
Can you just say something a bit more about the Ian Levine version? I'm intrigued. I've not heard of it.
So this was a private version, which no one knows about.
Okay.
So we're not talking about it.
So how do you know about it, then?
So no one knows about it, and he hired some actors to do the voice work, and he hired an animator to do the animation work. You may have seen it, because or a bit of it, because on BBC Breakfast, when this Shada was announced, they used an image from Ian Levine's Shard.
Oh my gosh. Oh dear. That's uncomfortable.
Yes, yeah, well, that's BBC News and Current Affairs all over.
We should say what happened next, which is that his Twitter feed went crazy. He got seriously hot under the collar about it.
Who did?
It's not for me to say his reaction.
Oh.
Was justified. I mean, Ian Levine tends to get hot under the collar if Stephen Moffat sneezes in the wrong way, so it's possibly entirely...
Not as hot under the collar as Stephen Moffat does as he sneezes. Well, I don't know what's happened to my voice.
What?
What I was trying to say was that he doesn't get as hot under the collar as Stephen Moffat does if he sneezes the wrong way.
Ah.
No.
It was not funny now.
Yeah, no, it kind of killed it, really, didn't we?
Yeah,
but yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing about Shadow, I would like to point out, is that the animation, I can take or leave, it looks fine, yes, whatever.
Yeah.
But the lighting in the animated scenes is really quite something.
Yeah, and some of the angles as well.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
It seems very flat in places for the actors, but the objects like the monsters or canine or whatever, really good. That's another thing as well. There was a shot that they did. Oh, that's right. When they've been captured by Skagger and they're in that cell, the overhead camera thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which is very surprising for that era of Doctor Who to have shots like that in there.
Yes.
So, I think that makes things like the action shot of K-9 from the low angle. I mean, that makes stuff like that work better, knowing that there's...
Didn't he do The Leisure Hive as well?
Bennett Roberts.
Ooh. Yeah.
I'm not hot on who directed what, so...
That's very innovative in its use of cameras.
Yeah,
it's got the longest opening pan in the world, up there.
Yes, which was a mistake.
Yes, it's a little too long. But
hang on, I've got my Doctor Who television companion here.
Yes.
Megloss. Sharder.
No, mine's in a box.
No, here it is. Love at Bickford. No, it wasn't. It was a different director. Okay, don't listen to me.
Who did Warrior's Gate? Because that, for me, is...
Paul Joyce.
Sorry?
Paul Joyce.
That's right, yeah, because that, for me, is among the best directed Doctor Who stories ever. I mean, it's a weird story anyway, but the way in which he does it, the fact that you have there an opening, long opening pan that does work.
Yes.
Simply because it sets the scene so beautifully.
And he uses the video as well in a way that you don't see outside of Top of the Pops.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. No. And that's just. And you say that, you know, the overhead shot was unusual, but we are actually only sort of a few episodes away from that, literally.
Yeah.
They were getting to the point where you could start being a little more experimental with Doctor Who, which may be the byproduct of not having to produce quite so many episodes in a year. I don't know. But,
probably. Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's Shada, the latest version. That surely the definitive version, if it's got sort of three versions on there. The only thing that's missing is Gareth Roberts' book. And I suppose there's actually another version, isn't there? I've just remembered there's an unofficial book that was written in the 1980s.
Ah.
Which you can find online. It isn't as good as Gareth Roberts' version, in my opinion.
One thing I did like about it was the fact that it opened with the old BBC logo and the voiceover saying, "Now on the BBC, a little later than scheduled."
Oh, yes. That was Haydock, wasn't it, I think?
Yes, which made me chuckle a lot.
Yes, it was, yeah. I think it's worth mentioning, just before we go, I absolutely love Skagra.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic. So it's a shame he didn't do any more Doctor Who, although I noticed that Christopher Neame has done a lot of Star Wars and Star Trek over the years, which is interesting. And in Star Wars in terms of voice work on video games, mostly. But he's done some Star Trek as well. Let us know what you think.
Quick bit of trivia.
Oh, go on then.
Just after Shada was cancelled, Christopher Neame starred in The Taming of the Shrew at my local theatre when I lived in Worthing and I was still a schoolboy. So I wrote to him and said, "Can I come in to talk to you about Shada?"
Okay, and what did he say?
No.
Excellent. Let us know what you think. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.